Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
I'm Kyrsten Sinema. I approve this message, and I'm running for the United States Senate because I'm not giving up on the American dream.
The Teachers Academy gives us a way to really address some of the workforce issues related to teaching so that we can make sure students graduate with practical experience and also the mentorship and professional development they need to be successful in the classroom.
The fact is, no political party has a monopoly on good ideas, especially when it comes to education. This was Fred's good idea, and it ignited this effort and brought us here today.
In exchange for bribes ranging from $13,000 to almost $100,000 each, these coaches allegedly pushed particular managers and advisors on the players and their families.
We all agreed that our players wanted to make a statement about unity, and we wanted to make a statement about equality. It was a coordinated effort. It was planned. I'm very proud of it.
And here with us to discuss Kyrsten Sinema's decision to run for Senate and the Arizona Teachers Academy and other items are Chuck Coughlin, president of High Ground Public Affairs Consultants, and Carl Gentles, partner at Goodwright Gentles. Guys, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having us. Thanks,
Carl, I'm going to start with you. I want to hear what you think about Kyrsten Sinema. For a lot of people, that was the worst kept secret, that she was going to run for Senate. How big an impact do you think she can have?
Well, you're right. It was the worst-kept secret. I think everybody's anticipated this for quite some time. It really, quite frankly, sets off a political storm in Arizona. As people have said, dominoes, you choose whatever you want to call it. But it is just going to be a fascinating next several months in Arizona. And quite frankly, on the Democratic side, it really does start to shape the future of the Democratic Party for the next 10, 15 years, depending on what the outcomes are with Sinema and then, of course, who's going to run for that seat.
Yeah, Chuck, what do you think?
Well, it's certainly an interesting opportunity for Kyrsten. I think she senses that our incumbent Senator Jeff Flake has a troublesome time in the Republican primary. You sense that there's a window here. She's not in the data that she's looking at. But again, it's typically a Republican cycle. It's in a gubernatorial cycle, Republican turnout is generally about 12% advantage, and she's not well known around the state. While she's well known in that 9 in her congressional district, which we're in right now, which is sort of the center part of Phoenix, it's not well known in the rest of the state. So she still can be framed, which I'm confident there's be a vigorous effort to discuss
a big,
who
file of things
here Kyrsten Sinema is.
And she may not be as well known around the state, but boy, she can raise some money. And she's got some charisma, and she can communicate a vision. And people vote for vision. And I think Kyrsten will be able to show that and contrast her vision with what the current national politics are today.
Carl, deep down, do you think that Kyrsten Sinema believes that, assuming she wins the primary, that she will be running in the general against Jeff Flake? Or do you think that deep down she believes that she'll be running against somebody else?
Oh, no, I think she believes it's going to be Jeff Flake. At least I think it will be. I don't think that Jeff Flake loses in the primary. I think he's just got far too deep roots here in Arizona. And I just don't think Kelly Ward appeals to a broad enough base. She has a very narrow appeal, and that's the farthest right wing of the Republican Party. I just don't think she has a capability to knock off Jeff Flake, who, when it comes down to raising money, he can do that. Now, some polls have suggested that she's ahead right now, but I just wouldn't count Jeff Flake out whatsoever.
There was one poll from the man sitting right next to you, Mr. Coughlin.
Yes. We showed Kyrsten. It was the week that the president visited the Valley. We showed Kyrsten beating the incumbent senator with our data, with that aforementioned 12-point Republican advantage. Yeah. Again, she's not well known. Here's the other strange thing. After we saw what happened in Alabama the other day with the Trump candidate being defeated in the primary, I agree with Carl that you have to say that the incumbent senator has the ability to control his destiny here. But Bannon's out roaming the countryside looking for candidates, and he's free of his White House shackles right now, We saw what happened in Alabama. I strongly suspect and I understand there's an effort underway here in Arizona to identify another candidate.
Now, you guys are very connected. Earlier today, we spoke to Nathan Gonzalez, who has been a guy who covers congressional races all across the country. He had said in D.C. there is real speculation that Jeff Flake may decide not to run at all. Do you guys believe that at all?
I think... You know, Jeff comes from the Goldwater Institute background. That was where he was sort of birthed. He's a conservative's conservative in terms of the Bill Buckley, libertarian, Ronald Reagan conservatism. It's out of touch with where the party is right now in this populist element. You know, Jeff is not an unimaginative person. And I could see potentially him seeing something better he wants to do in his life other than struggling with the dysfunction of our Republican Party right now.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting theory. I'm reading his book right now, which is very good. But what you hear from Jeff and what you read in his book is how disillusioned he has become with what's going on in D.C., in Washington, and with the party. He is exceptionally disappointed in the party. And their lack of, as he calls it, principled conservatism. So could he just step back? He could, but I wouldn't, if I were going to Vegas and putting down my last dollar, I'm not sure I would do that.
Nobody would have, yeah, none of us would have bet on Donald Trump being the president either, right?
You're absolutely right.
That's why we do this. And,
that's right.
You know, we could, it's highly unlikely that ever happens, but, you know, we're living in a new age.
Chuck, Carl had mentioned other dominoes from Kyrsten Sinema's announcement in the Senate. The most obvious one is her congressional district, which on paper is a competitive one, but she is sort of locked down since that first election. Any idea of who might be jumping into that race? We've heard maybe Phoenix Mayor Greg Stanton. Is he the front runner on the Democratic side?
Yeah, I would believe that to be the case. The district on paper looks to be a competitive district. It's not. It's a very Democratic district. From a participation standpoint, the way it was drawn, it has a Republican advantage, but it's a different type of Republican that we're talking about. For instance, in the last cycle, Hillary Clinton beat Donald Trump by 13 points in that district. John McCain won in that district by 3.
Over Andrew Kirkpatrick.
Fred Duvall beat Doug Ducey in that district. So it doesn't participate in the way. So, again, that's another issue that you got to think about in terms of Kyrsten's overall electability. It's a much more urban silk stock. You know, does Kyrsten's conservative or brand of politics sell outside of that district?
Right. Well, and it also means that on a Republican side, you're not going to elect a Donald Trump Republican in that district. It's not going to happen. All right. So then that now becomes who is more of a Kyrsten Sinema-like candidate on a Republican side that will appeal to that majority Democratic base. And so that narrows the field.
Yeah.
And
to whom? Any sense?
So there's three or four people that are talking about. Dr. Ferrara is running right now. Very compelling candidate. Got a great background. Veteran doctor. Never ran for office before. I've had the opportunity to meet him. Impressive. There's a discussion of Seth Liebson, who was the head of the he was on Bill Bennett's staff at one point in time. He's talked about it. And he ran the anti-medical or anti-marijuana legalization campaign last time. And then Carl and I have a good friend, Paul Hickman, who's president of the Arizona Bankers Association, and I think is the longest serving staffer for John McCain. I think he served with John for 18 years. And a wonderful guy, and he's strongly considering it as well.
And he's got real opportunity on the Republican side here because he can raise money. He's been a longtime Arizona Bankers Association president, and so he has deep connections with financial guys and people that can actually, you know, raise money for him. And also, of course, I would expect that he would have a strong opportunity to receive McCain's endorsement. If he does that, that changes the game in the district.
Assuming that Greg Stanton gets in the race, does that clear the field, do you think, on the Democratic side?
Well, I would hope so. If Democrats have any bit of sense, they would say, let's unify behind Greg Stanton. Because, look, it's already hard. If you're a Democrat in this state, you're like a dinosaur, okay? So, you know, we don't want to kill off the last remaining Democrats in the state. So if you really want to, as a party, listen, you'd want to unify behind Greg Stanton, because he is the largest, the biggest name, and potentially the largest potential for raising money for that district on the Democratic side.
So I couldn't agree with Carl more. But the funny thing in partisan politics, my understanding is that Kirsten was actually out recruiting. Talking to people like Neil Giuliano and other people trying to, because, you know, as all politicians are, you know, my feathers are prettier than your feathers. And so we have a game going on. And so I was astounded by that, because with the opportunity that she has in front of her, you would think, let's leave what's behind me. Let's focus on the enormous challenge I have in front of me. But I know for a fact that was going on.
Well, but one other thing. I mean, again, this race has the potential for Democrats to do something transformational on the Democratic side. It really does, all the way downstream. And so if the Democrats are smart, they're going to unify behind a candidate, and potentially that's Greg Stanton, and then make their best push to get Kirsten in as the next U.S. senator. And then you've got Stanton there in Congress. So now you've got a huge shift taking place. And then you start looking downstream at City Hall, and all kinds of things are going to start jumping around over there.
And so, guys, very briefly before we go to break, coming back to our initial topic, now things can change. We're more than a year out. Who is the senator out of that race, Carl, as far as whether it's Flake versus Sinema, whether it's Ward versus Sinema, whether it's Robert Graham versus Sinema, or forgive me for not mentioning Deidre Abood, but I'm presuming Sinema is going to win that. What do you think?
You know,
we're not recording this at all.
Yeah. I was going to say maybe I'll punt on this one, because, you know,
you don't get invited back if you punt.
Get put in a corner. But, you know, I'm going to lay down odds on favorite for Sinema. Yeah, I might not bet my last dollar, but I might bet my last.
You already bet your last dollar before when you went to Vegas.
But I think Sinema's she's just an amazing candidate. And I think she's, of anybody up to run, she's probably got the best chance to knock off Flake.
Gotcha.
I got to go with my polling data that I have today. And but with the giant asterisk caveat that things change, as we know. And Donald Trump's our president. And so things will change. Yeah. And she's never run statewide. She has run in nine, and she's not well known. And there's a morphing going on. Some would call it a circular firing squad in the Republican Party right now. So I'm not sure we know what will happen. But if the race stays as it is today, I would say she's the likely winner.
That's Chuck Coughlin. Also here is Carl Gentles. It is the News Cap on the show here on 91.5 KJZZ. Coming up, we'll be talking about the Arizona Teachers Academy and a lot more. Stay with us. Good Friday morning. It's the show on 91.5, and you're in the midst of our newscap segment featuring Chuck Coughlin and Carl Gentles. And with Mark Brody, I'm Steve Goldstein. Chuck, let's talk about the Arizona Teachers Academy, which big announcement as far as getting more teachers to stay in Arizona, raising their pay, whatnot. What do you make of this, especially because a lot of people are wondering, like, where's the money coming from? Was this plan really well thought out?
Yeah, I think the governor acknowledges that he's been spending a lot of time talking about education. So this is another component of that effort. He funded partial kindergarten last year. I would suspect he's moving towards a day where, and maybe in the next budget, all things again staying the same, that he may offer some additional resources to that. I think this is part of his component of talking about how his efforts to support K through 12 are important, because he understands that, I believe, that our K through 12 system is the human capital which we're going to develop our economy with. The problem with it is that, you know, Nevada, Utah, and New Mexico all pay their teachers more than we do. So the argument would be, we're going to pay for these teachers, and then they're going to leave to go teach someplace else because the competitive salary is just not there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, my mother always told me, Carl, in order to make some change, you got to take the first step and do something. And so kudos to Governor Ducey for doing something and trying to find a way under some very tight constraints, which is money, to keep teachers here and to grow our own teachers. And the challenge that we have is, you know, our teachers are being peeled off by other states, as we've all talked about. And secondly, we're I think, did we say last in teacher pay? If not, near last. So kudos to the governor. It's a bipartisan kind of approach. I think this idea dates all the way back to Fred Duvall when he ran for governor. So, you know, the solving the educational issue and keeping teachers in the state is going to take a bipartisan approach and some creative mechanism in terms of funding to make the, you know, to keep teachers here.
It's a good first step. Maybe the tax reform proposal in Washington will lead the governor and others in Arizona to look at opportunities to fund the enterprise. As the feds cut taxes, maybe we look at a backfill opportunity to take some of those revenues, and maybe it's less of a tax cut for Arizona. But we'll see. As Carl says, it's a good first step.
How big of a dent do you guys think that this specific effort can realistically make? I mean, there have been teachers, you know, coming out of the universities for years now, but we still have had this teacher shortage for a long time.
Well, I don't think this you can solve the problem by one thing, doing one thing. So this has to be a part of a broader kind of strategy for the state. So including, and you know, the governor doesn't like raising taxes. The state legislature doesn't like raising taxes, no matter if you call it a vehicle license tax or otherwise, right, or a fee. But there's got to be some packaged approach that A, has the buy-in of the corporate leaders here in town and others. So
you got to keep teachers in the classroom. I mean, I think we have really good teachers. We have wonderful people that want to commit their lives to this.
Right.
I was talking to a gentleman the other day whose daughter is working up in Sunny Slope, and it's a 12-hour workday.
Yeah.
And it's constantly engaged. And, you know, she's making 30-something a year, and you're just not going to keep people around unless they see an opportunity for advancement, career advancement in that. We're going to burn people out. And so I think ultimately we have to find a way.
Carl, let's move on to this big NCAA college basketball scandal, which is going to touch the U of A. This is not just the NCAA coming down and saying, hey, we're going to take away scholarships from you. This is the FBI being involved in a major operation here. And it could end up taking down U of A's head coach, whatnot. What do you make of just the impact of this sort of thing on a sport that a lot of us who are fans just wanted to keep amateur, though we knew it really wasn't?
Well, you know, as a Wildcat, I might get, or as a Sun Devil, I might get in trouble by saying how much I love Arizona basketball.
You might get in trouble for confusing those two.
So exactly. So I'm a big Arizona Wildcat fan. Here's the thing: you kind of knew some of this was going on throughout years. Okay, so but you never could quite put your finger on it. The challenge here is this isn't the last shoe to drop. I think there are multiple sneakers shoes to drop across the country that you're going to start peeling back the onion and start to see a whole lot of stuff that you didn't want to see, especially as college basketball fans. But that being said, when the FBI gets involved, it's dead serious. Mm-hmm. It's not over a singular or a couple of different issues. It's wide and deep when the FBI gets involved.
And Chuck, we don't have time to get into this, but I'll ask the question anyway. Should these college athletes be getting paid to avoid stuff like this?
I think that's where you ultimately have to go. I mean, I can make the argument. I grew up in Ann Arbor. I saw the Fab Five. This is not a new thing. And it's a lot of money. And, you know, you make that iconic argument, well, you're getting this great education. Well, the university's making a ton of money. Apparel companies are making a ton of money. So is there some kind of stipend that should be provided or a 401k or something that allows an athlete, maybe not today, but post-graduation, if they don't make it into the league, to establish a business or something that they can legitimately do? And I think that's probably where this ends up eventually.
Chuck, does this put anybody at the state level, either the Board of Regents or the governor or anybody else in state government, in kind of an uncomfortable position, given that we're not talking about a private university and sort of what they're dealing with? This is a public university with coaches and assistant coaches getting taxpayer-funded salaries.
The highest paid public officials in the state are coaches. And so, yes, it does. I'm sure there's that. You know, I have confidence in the athletic program and the integrity of the athletic program. You know, it's going to be hard, and to say you didn't know, you know, it, and it's going to be some tough sledding here for a while. But I think both ASU and U of A will endure and will survive through this, and the coaches will be okay. It seems to me like it's many of these programs that have one guy right. that is, hey, this is your deal.
It just takes one bad apple to kill the whole thing.
And they have to mature that. And I'm hoping that the system absorbs that and we don't end up with a bunch of more scalps on the wall just for political correctness sake.
Got it.
All right, let's wrap up, guys. Chuck, I'm going to have to go to you first, but we've got a minute and a half left. Please, both of you, jump in. Why is the Jefferson Davis Highway not going to become the Rose Mofford Highway?
It's not to say it won't.
Okay.
As a member of the State Geographic Board's Naming Committee, I think we'll have a meeting very soon to discuss that. We're trying to get from ADOT the actual naming of what is named or what's not named. We're not clear on that right now. And when we are presented, hopefully at our next meeting, with a proper formed petition, I think celebrating Arizona history, this is just my opinion. I'm not talking to all my other colleagues on the board, but opportunities to celebrate Arizona's history, in particular, if it's US 60 and Mofford to Globe, that's the freeway she took in, that would be a wonderful celebration of Arizona history.
Would that be a good direction, Carl?
Oh, I think it would be a great direction. I think Rose Mofford is probably one of the most endearing and beloved governors that Arizona has seen. So I think there would not be much opposition to that naming of the freeway after her.
All right, Chuck, we'll make it happen. Okay.
that's what we do. I'll tell everybody. Steve Goldstein told me
that
we've got to make it happen.
That's
so
right.
It's done. It's done. Just, you know, that we do things on the newscap.
That's right.
Chuck Hoff, the president of High Ground Public Affairs Consultants. Carl Gentles, partner at Goodright Channels. Guys, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Ram.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.